you very much for giving me the opportunity to actually do two talks within 3 days after the release.
I had only 24 hours to prepare for each of the talks, so I'll do my best to deliver the results, but do ask questions because I may be missing something important that I have to say. All right, I showed these slides as well for the first talk that I gave, but because not everybody was there, let me just repeat. So we just got the data, the five-year results out a few days ago, and we published 7 papers. We posted them to the archive already. All of them are there. The data are public in the Lambda site, so you can download them and do whatever you want to do with that. We have 7 papers starting from Hinshaw et al., the basic summary result that summarized the significant findings in the 7 papers, and data processing, detailed analysis of systematic errors in sky maps. Hiro et al., the update in the beam maps and window functions. And this is one of the major improvements in the analysis that we made for the 5-year. And Gold et al. Summarizes the foreground analysis. And again, we had an upgrade in the mask, the galactic foreground mask. And I will talk about that because that's important for non-Gaussian analysis. Right at all on the source catalog, because we have lower noise level, we can remove more point sources. So we can get rid of more non-Gaussianity from the sources in that way. Note that all talks about angular power spectra, both temperature and polarization power spectra. We have a significant improvement in the polarization power spectrum. And Dunkley et al. Talks about how do we estimate parameters from that using multiple chain Monte Carlo, and also summarize the parameters, cosmological parameters from the WMAP. And for example, we had 2 major findings from the WMAP analysis alone, which is the improved estimate of the reionization redshift, which now excludes the instantaneous reionization at Z equals 6 at 3.5 sigma. That's significant that, you know what I'm talking about if you're working on the reionization community, but this is not that important for this community. and we have this evidence for the non-zero number of neutrinos, cosmic neutrinos background from CMB data alone, in fact, WMAP data alone. So we just had a press release about these 2 points plus some other points yesterday. So if you haven't checked that up yet, please go to NASA website and please enjoy. And this Komatsu et al. Talks about other cosmological interpretations, implications of inflation, implications for dark energy, parity violation, flatness, I don't know, other things, including non-Gaussianity. And in this talk, I will focus just on non-Gaussian analysis because that's what this workshop is for. And I showed this slide as well for the first talk, but let me just repeat. So this is the 5-year science team, and these 7 summaries are PI and co-wise who initiated WMAP. Of course, David Wilkinson was there, but he unfortunately passed away, but he could see the 5-year maps and power spectrum, and he was very pleased. He was very smiling very much this year. And then the people written on the blue were joined the WMAP after these people initiated WMAP. And then people in the purple were added after that to help the analysis. And then I said this in the first talk, but also, you know, WMAP has this system that the young people join the collaboration, do excellent work, leave for and get job elsewhere and do continue to do well. And we have 5 people who graduated, including Richard Velde there. But of course, 5-year analysis is, you know, totally dependent on what we have done, they have done in the past. So special thanks to WMAP graduates. What is FNL? So this is a measurement of FNL, and I had this pedagogical introduction to FNL up on the web. I wrote a few years ago. This is actually my thesis. I'm advertising here. In one sentence, FNL is a quantitative measure of the magnitude of the primordial non-Gaussianity in curvature part of the matrix with asterisk. when I say curvature perturbation, positive perturbation gives a negative CM anisotropy to some people with different conventions, but this is what I mean. So FNL, that's the one sentence summary of FNL. Why is non-Gaussian important? Because it has the best chance of actually ruling out the largest class of our universe models altogether. So, it will, for example, rule out inflation models based upon single field scalar field with the canonical kinetic term that rolled down smooth scalar potential slowly and was initially in the positive vacuum. Now, when I have four blips like that, it doesn't seem like a generic model. However, you know, probably 99% of the models in the literature are in this category.
Right. So detection of non-Gaussianity would be a major breakthrough possible. I think there's no question about that. But, you know, it's not just non-Gaussianity. We have RF and S, my father, to do more complicated things. And this is a plot I showed you in the first talk. So we have, you know, very good measurement of tensor amplitude and S. And we, you know, we excluded, for example, lambda phi to the fourth model. M squared, phi squared models are outside of one sigma, but they are still within two sigma.
But I guess, you know, in several years, we probably begin to push this down to essentially challenge these models. If you have inflation, then that is actually shifted to the left, and this point begins to be disfavored. And we have implications for power inflation and stuff like that. But, you know, so we are doing pretty well on that. And we continue to do well. So why bother? Well, there are many models up here that still survive. And FNL is essentially challenging this whole paradigm. This is more like you are being within the paradigm and trying to select one model over the other. But FNL essentially rules everything out. So it's a different question, it's a different quantity, but I think it's a good thing that we have this quantity that offers a different way of looking at your universe physics, not just NS and R. So it gives us more opportunity to study these interesting cosmological models. What if an FN is not zero? So a single field will be ruled out. You might want to have multi-field, like curvaton. Well, canonical kinetic term may be ruled out, still maintain a single field, in which case you want to have non-canonical kinetic term. Well, you are single field, canonic kinetic term, but you're not slowly rolling. So you temporarily break swirl, you're temporarily fast rolling, or your single field, canonic kinetic term, slowly rolling, but your initial condition wasn't the boundary derivatives. Then you can get that FNL. But you know, either way, if you know anything like this was, if anything like that was confirmed, that will really give us a breakthrough. It will give us a lot of clues as to what direction we should go, we should be going. And these information is very difficult to obtain if we're just focusing on power spectrum, because these models can give you exactly the same number of values for NS and exactly the same numbers for R. So what is FNL? You have this triangle in the sky that you want to look at. And this is the amplitude of three-point function. So you write down the curvature perturbation, multiply them together, then coefficient, now we take it to be constant. That's the amplitude. But then you have all the scale dependence encoded in this B function. That depends on the shape of the triangle that you want to look at. So this is the model dependent function. So I'm just having one parameter that characterizes only the amplitude. You have this delta function here because triangle, you know, these k vectors must form a triangle. That's the only reason. This is cubed, I'm sorry, it's cubed. Okay. Y-by spectrum, this is the first thing to look at. Bispectrum is nice because it's zero for Gaussian fields. So you know that you're looking at something different, you know, some deviation from zero, and that's always easy to do. If you already had some huge signal to begin with, and looking for the tiny deviation from the huge signal, that's usually more difficult. tri spectrum is, for example, a little bit more difficult because even Gaussian fields can give you tri spectrum. But bispectrum is easy because of that. So it's a very sensitive tool for finding non Gaussian. And also, fortunately, the bispectral analysis is feasible within the computation power that we have now. So that's also another reason. There are two FNLs. So there used to be only one FNL, it's local form. The FNL happens to be sensitive to that squeezed limit. And but this was realized only later by Babich et al. When this form was first proposed, it was written in this way, because this was something that was predicted to exist by a seminal paper by Salpeck and Bond. And there are a few other very pioneering work, you know, trying to make sense of this model. And then later, so when, you know, for example, when I entered into this field, I thought it just, I'm happy about having one FNL. And I had no hope of even trying to discriminate between different triangles. I thought just there was no hope in doing that. But then Babich et al. Said, actually, you can do equilateral form that's also physically motivated. And these are highly complementary by looking at, you know, these triangles as clear. So you can actually distinguish between them. And I can show you how it's actually working in real life, you know, from W of data. That's very nice. Oh, actually, it is this. Okay. So this is kind of the journal keeping track of how FN has been constrained. So this is from COBE 4 year data, 2002. Doesn't seem like too long ago. FN was 1,000, you know, and LMAX 20. Then WMAP came and we measured it to this level, then 3 year, then 5 year, after this. So as you can see, we have been improving, steadily improving our limit in this way. Now, well, I'll talk a lot more about what I mean by this bound. But you know, there seems to be some consistent positive bias, except this one. This was a much noisier result, but it's consistently the likelihood is skewed for the higher FNL. Equilateral was measured first by Quadrilateral for the first year and 3 year data, and we adapted their methodology and applied that to WM 5 year data and got this constraint. So far, no detection, and these conclusions consistent with the previous one. But now you see, you know, you can actually measure these two quantities, and you get different results, right? Well, they are both consistent with zero at two sigma level, but the way they are measured and the values are very, very different. So you can clearly see from this that you can distinguish between two parameters. It is entirely possible that you find local but don't find equilateral, or don't find equilateral but find local. That's entirely possible, and that's already telling you that you can use this to distinguish between the two. And that was just totally unimaginable when this thing happened, this field sort of emerged. So that's very, very significant progress. I'm not going to bother you too much with how we measure these things. Please read Appendix A. but all I can say is that this method is now relatively well established. You know, many people worked on improving upon the methodology, and it's even still ongoing. And Kendrick probably has the best idea about how to reduce the error to the smallest possible level. So I'd love to hear from him about that. Data combination, we mainly use V-band, 60 gigahertz, and W-band, 94 gigahertz. And as I show you later, the results from Q-band are not that robust with respect to how you deal with the foreground. So this is probably, there's a probably stronger foreground contamination. So that's not the prime channel. And we're going to use mainly foreground reduced maps delivered on Lambda. We have a good reason to believe that our foreground correction is good. But for the cross-check, we also give the results from the raw maps. Okay? What about mask? So mask is really the thing that has changed from the 3 year to 5 year. And this is the thing that has the largest impact on the non-Gaussian analysis. So let me just spend a little bit more time talking about that. We have upgraded the Galaxy mask. And for the first and 3 year release, we had this so-called KP0. I'll tell you what that means in the next slide. So KP0 is a mask that cuts or retains 77% of the sky for the cosmological analysis. And that's recommended for Gaussian energy tests. And KP2 mask, this is a smaller mask. And we figured that that was good enough for the power spectrum analysis as long as you clean the maps. And this will give you the smaller error bar for the power spectrum analysis. We didn't find any evidence for the contamination from the foreground. So this was recommended for power spectrum analysis. Now we have upgraded both of these. And now we have even has a different name, KQ75. For Gaussian energy test, this is called extended temperature mask in lambda. And KQ85, that's now called temperature analysis mask in a lambda website. And they cut, you know, not surprisingly, we upgraded to cut more sky. And I'll tell you why we did that. So what are the KQX masks? Previous KPN masks, so what K means K-band. P means plus, and N is a level, brightness level at which you cut the sky, okay? To cut the pixels. So we have this K-band map, and K-band is almost entirely dominated by synchrotron. So we try to define the mask so that we cut the pixels that have very bright synchrotron, okay? But we're exclusively relying on K-band, that's why we call it K mask. And then, so that worked well, but now new mask, KQ mask. Now you notice Q here. Now we include Q band data. That's 40 gigahertz. Our K band is 22 gigahertz. Q is 41 gigahertz. To define mask as well. Now why is that? You have three different foreground components in the universe: synchrotron, free, and dust. And synchrotron is dominant at low frequency. Free have an intermediate spectral index, so it's less important on higher frequency, lower frequency, but more important on higher frequency. But then you have dust, and dust is, you know, very small on high, low frequency, but very important high frequency. Now, what happens is that by using K band alone, we're missing. It turns out we're missing out. We're not masking the region that doesn't have much synchrotron, but has a lot of free field. Right? By just visually, we identify the regions that wasn't masked by K-mask. So we decided to combine K information and Q information to get rid of synchrotron and free field. Okay, so that's why we did that. Dust doesn't seem to be dominant source of foreground. If we subtract the FDS, that's not, right? So these two components seem to be the more important sources of the foreground. And also, and this is the sort of active research field in the foreground community, but it seems to be there's a correlation between dust and synchrotron, morphologically, right? So by masking out the synchrotron region, we're also masking out some of the dust region as well. But usually the amount by which we mask for the synchrotron is larger than the amount by which you mask the dust, right? So.
Check the potentials of the FDS maps?
No, we haven't done that. That was one of the things that in our to-do list, but we didn't mind us get to that. All right. But we have lots of other tests for program, so I hope you will be happy about that. All right, so now the big difference also, and this is going to address one of the questions that Dan raised. So K-band mask was defined on the K-band map, but K-band map contains both synchrotron and CMB. Right? So by cutting out the bright pixels in the K-band, aren't we actually cutting out CMB as well? One quick answer is that it's not that important, in fact, because when we cut the pixels, we don't really leave, for example, you know, when you do this brute force, you see islands on high galactic latitude. You could be picking up noise, you could be picking up CMB. Whenever you see islands like that, that's not unphysical, so we don't include them in the mask. But doesn't probably satisfy you. Now, for this new KQ mask, we do the following thing. We first move K-band, Q-band map to 1.
We also have this CMB map derived from this ILC map, internal linear combination map. That's the CMB sky that you always see. Right. Nowadays, you don't even see the galaxy in the CMB sky. You always see this ILC map. We subtract that from K and Q band at the same resolution. Get rid of CMB. Then define mask on that CMB free sky. Okay. So this removes any concerns about subtracting CMB by defining mask. That's one thing. In doing so, also, we can get down to the fainter level of foreground. Because CMB is bright, after all, pretty bright. So by having CMB in there, your foreground search algorithm is ineffective in picking up foreground component. So by getting rid of this bright CMB, you can actually do better in subtracting foreground. All right. Now, X represents the fraction of the sky retained in K or Q. So when we say KQ 75, it means 75% of the sky is retained in K. Yes? Yes.
I have in principle subtracted W from Q for V, and then that would give you a dust mask as well, right? So that's...
Yeah, we looked at that, but didn't seem to be.
That didn't make much of a difference. Right?
The modification that you described only affects the mask right near the boundary, right?
Yeah,
you
right.
Don't do anything higher than.
Yeah, so essentially we are sure that K mask. Didn't do any much for the room in scanning. All right. So KQ175 mask removes the pixels that are contaminated more by the free field. And CMB was absent. Now, so why is KQ75 doesn't retain 75% of the mask, 75% of the sky? That's because K mask retains 75% of the sky in K band, and Q mask retains 75% of the sky for K band, and they don't overlap. So when you combine them together, final KQ75 mask retains less than 75% of the sky. So in fact, it retains 72% of the sky. So it cuts 4% more sky compared to the KP0 mask. So inevitably, this will increase the error in FNL by a square root of 76 divided by 72. Okay. Seems like a small number, but it's a big deal if you're working on this field. Okay. This is the difference between KP0 mask and KQ75 mask. So if you look at this, you don't really see the difference. But if you look at carefully, well, maybe take the difference. This is the region of the sky that wasn't cut by KP0, but now it is cut by KQ75. So you see this edge of the galaxy that's now cut. It wasn't cut before. And you see red spots here and there, right? So you see positive excess that's due to extra foreground that we didn't subtract. I have to note that these are raw maps before foreground subtraction. So after foreground subtraction, you don't see as much red as it is here. But anyway, this is the difference. And you see, for example, there's a nebula here, and now we are cutting a little bit more of the edge of that region that was masking KP0, but we are cutting more around it.
Get any islands?
We still got some islands, but so we retained only the pixels that have more than 500 pixels at the highest resolution. But otherwise, we didn't include that. Just show you
how small KP2 mask is. So this is KP2, right? This is the mask used for the temperature power spectral analysis. And this is a revised version of that. Now you see it's, you know, more heavily contaminated, right? Now you see why we want to use KP0 for Gaussian analysis. But once again, this is for raw maps. If you do this for the clean maps, then you don't really see much of the contamination like that. So foreground removal is very effective. But even if you didn't do that, if we, as long as you're using KP0, KP75, you seem to be doing okay. All right, so this is the one table in Komatsu et al., non-Gaussian GFS. So it's a busy plot, a busy table, but let me show you. So first of all, here is the Q and W combined clean maps results. Okay, so clean maps. These are the masks, four masks, and LMAX, maximum multiples that are included in analysis. And you see the value. So let me walk you through what I'm showing here. Let's focus on, okay, so 5-year temperature data are cosmic variance limited to L of 530. Okay. So by choosing LMAX at 500, we're sure that we're cosmic variance limited. And indeed, the error that we get from this analysis is very close to what you would expect from the Fisher matrix analysis. Okay. So that's very good. All right, now, if we use this most conservative mask, KQ75, we'll get 55 plus minus 30 at 68% level. If we use KP0 previous mask, we'll get smaller error because we are cutting out less sky. And you see, error, change in error is 4. That's a big deal if you're working on this field. So that's why, you know, cutting out more sky is not really what you want to do, but you know, this mask had to be there to account for the free region, so this is right to, it is right to use that.
KQ85 and KP0 are the same, or?
Pardon me?
KP0 and KQ85, they have the same area?
They don't have the same area. However, the morphology of the mask is different. And so it's not just area, actually, the shape also matters. Yeah. But if you say their morphology is the same, right? Let's say their morphology is the same, and then just scale the error by the area of the mask, you get 25 instead of 26. So it's not that huge effect, yeah.
In KQ75, the error changes by 10% or so.
Yeah.
Do you expect that?
Yeah, I do expect that. Yes, I do.
The scaling of the
error. Yes. Right. Okay. Yes. So things are expected. Now, so KP0 prefers slightly higher value for FNL, but you know, it's not that different. Even KQ85, once you clean the maps, their values are very similar. So if I had to give you one number that sort of summarizes all of this, I would say 60 plus minus 30. There you go. I give it to you. Two sigma hint and. But if you wanted to retain number of sigma to a second decimal point, then 1.8 sigma for KQ75, 2.3 sigma for KQ85, and KP0 because their results are exactly the same. Okay.
Because it's a suboptimality of the estimator that's just been talked about. Okay.
So this is the cosmic variance limit. Once you go above that, you begin to be noise dominated. But it used to be that if you go even like a delta L of 10 after this, error just blows up. So it is very pleasing to see that the error doesn't blow up, although it's slightly larger. We didn't have this before. So this is a big improvement. And the values, okay, let me go to the table. So I'm just highlighting different things. So, I'm sorry, before I even go to that, let me just address second question that Dan raised, point source. So we're cutting point sources, and we're cutting point sources in K-band. Aren't we cutting point sources, or aren't we cutting CNB instead of point sources? Right. Or for example, when you happen to be in the CNB hotspot, it's easier to detect point sources, but if you're in a negative spot, it's more difficult. Actually, Nader writes point source algorithm also does the same thing. It removes ILC map first, then search for the point sources. But not all sources are found in that way. In fact, this KQ75 mask masks out the map at the sources that were found in K-band without removing ILC. What is this KQ75P1? That's the KQ75 mask with the point source mask that doesn't include WMAP sources. But these source masks, these sources are found in other surveys, like NVSS, other surveys. Okay, has nothing to do with WMAP data.
The potential wells they sit in produce ISW.
Okay, that's not what we address. We're sort of addressing the bias that we could be having because we're searching for the point source in our own WMAP data. So that's a separate question. But values don't seem to change very much, right? So that wasn't that was a concern, but that's not a concern at all anymore. All right. So what about L dependence, L max dependence? Let's go to L max 600, 700 deep in the noise regime. But values don't seem to change very much. Well, yes, there is some delta FN of say 8 jump from here to there, but not as much as you've seen in the previous talk. Same is here. And KQ75 and KQ85 actually give you very similar results. So results are not very sensitive to the maximum multiples using analysis. I don't show less than 400.
Pardon? What does it do at less than 400?
I don't know, I didn't calculate it. Yeah, each column
so somebody has an estimator which is optimal, right? It doesn't have this problem, right? Is there an
option? This thing? Yeah, Kendrick is working for that.
So, what makes the estimator not optimal? Is it the implementation of C-inverse? Or
yes, it is a C-inverse, yeah. I tried to imitate C-inverse. Mm-hmm. Fail. but Kendrick is the idea. My sort of naive C-inverse worked very well for estimating B source, actually, the point source bispectrum. Now it's saturated efficient now. Mm-hmm. Also, equilateral bispectrum is the but didn't work for local. What about this delta FN? What is this? This is the point source contribution. So, what is the form?
When we estimate the FNL and errors, we run lots of Monte Carlos. You include CMB Monte Carlo. You include noisy Monte Carlo, but you can also include point sources in Monte Carlo. That's what I did. Just wanted to check if my estimator for the B source was unbiased and wasn't. But as the a bonus, I can see how much FNL I get from point sources. Because I know that my simulations are Gaussian except for the presence of point sources. So if I'm getting anything significant from that simulation, it must be due to point sources.
Yes. They're not clustered.
Not clusters.
So if they were clustered, this would be different thing.
It would be different, yeah. I'm sorry. My simulation is very simple.
Now, let's see. So what I'm seeing here. So this is 2. Error bias 2. OK, but first of mean. OK, so this is average FNL, averaged over 300 Monte Carlo simulations. Plus minus 2 is simply 36 divided by square root of 300. Yeah. I'm sorry, I'm so simple person. But you see 2.5 sigma detection of points of the bispectrum in the form of FNL. You can just forget about it, it's not that important, but I simply subtract this number from this when I report the final result. Okay. Oh, and these values are actually likely overestimated by a factor of 2. The reason is that I measure BFNL independent of this from the data, and you find the Q-band B source, which has a certain value. Okay. On the other hand, my simulation, when I create the simulations, my simulations produce the FNL, I'm sorry, B source that's twice as large as what I see in the real data, which means these means are likely overestimated by a factor of 2. So bearing that in mind. But if you wanted to be overly conservative, you can subtract this value from the deficit. Null tests. So let's get rid of CNB, but perhaps retain foreground and possible non-Gaussianity in the noise. So you subtract W from Q. Because Q has a lot more synchrotron than W, you're left with a lot of synchrotron. If you don't subtract the foreground, you do it with raw maps. This is what you find for FNL. And you detect something at more than 2 sigma.
Monte Carlo. What do you want to know?
I simulate Q, I simulate W, subtract.
But you don't want to go you don't want to go to the foreground, so.
Oh, but so that's why I'm saying this is a detection of foreground FNL relative to the.
Okay. So that's just the noise detector noise. Is that error?
This is purely the. That's why clean without the road is not exactly the same. Once you clean, though, oh, and this is telling you that the foreground contamination will give you negative FNL. And now, if you clean, then you don't seem to see much of evidence for the program contamination. So that's good to see. Yeah. Yeah.
So if you subtract the two masks, then what you're left with is mostly foreground.
Yeah.
So why is the FNL looking so small compared to when you have that huge area of the sky and you have that very large local?
So this map doesn't contain CMB. Right. So if CMB is responsible for the signal, here. And also, you see the error that's very, very small because you don't have any cosmic variance in this.
Doesn't the sign agree with your sign? Or is
Q band is, we find that Q band is also foreground contaminated, so you get a negative, bias from it.
Okay.
But this is a larger mask than the one we use.
Okay, that's where you can get to different numbers.
Ichiro, have you done interband bi spectrum?
No, I haven't done that. That was also not a to do list in the didn't want to do it. You mean QB it's a little bit trickier because you have different beams. Okay. But what I could have done was to actually smooth the maps to the common resolution into this.
You can always well, it's true, but not sure if the estimator is optimal anymore because the noise actually has strong correlations.
But probably it doesn't matter because you won't cover it anyway. And maybe because it's a null test, you don't care.
Why do you say noise has a strong correlation? If you're smooth.
It's not a null test because if you have primarily FNL, then it would show.
But it's a check, it's a cross check. Right?
It's a cross check.
No, but you can take a difference thing and reconstruct with W and Q, the Q minus W or something.
Yeah, there are a lot of things you can do, yeah. So I'm just showing you the selected list of null tests that I could do on time.
I sometimes do this tomorrow. Yeah, right.
What about frequency dependence? So I'm again showing you the results from raw maps and clean maps. Again, the same task. And as you can see, one thing that's very clear from this is that Q is just very sensitive to how you do raw mass production. So I think, you know, combined with the previous table, I think I can convince you that using Q isn't really a good thing. But B and W, they are very robust. Even if you do it on a raw, you get some different results, but they're not that different. Yeah, that's the result. Oh, by the way, these results are all for n max to 500.
So even if you don't remove any foregrounds in
BOW,
it doesn't make any effect on
the non-Gaussian. I wouldn't say it doesn't make any effect, but within the delta FNL 10, they give you consistent answers. Delta FNL 10 is actually a big deal, but you know, when we have more significant detections, maybe that doesn't really matter. I wouldn't be surprised if we essentially have the detection in both raw and clean maps in the future. If it's there. What about raw versus clean? So this, again, let's come back to this V plus W, that's the golden combination that we're using.
And now vary the mask, KQ85, KT0, KT5P1, KT5. These are the results from raw, right? And this is the expected result. KQ85, which is the most aggressive mask, if it's raw, then just FNF drops to smaller value. So this combination is not robust against the forward cut. But otherwise, you know, either you're using KT0 or KT75, the values are very robust against the foreground clean. So you see raw here, and you see clean results here. Delta FNL is 10, but to within that, it's robust. Now, also, you know, this may disturb you a little bit, but after you clean the temperature maps, and we have been seeing this over and over again, the temperature policy analysis, because there we do, of course, worry about forming contamination, but we don't really seem to find any compelling evidence for the forming contamination in even KQ85 mask once we cleaned up the temperature maps. Indeed, they actually give you very, very consistent results. So although we are going to take KQ75 results as our best estimate, because there's a reason to do that, I would say KQ0 and KQ85 mask results are probably as clean as a KQ75 result, as far as foreground contamination is concerned. Let's see. So here is our best estimate. Why not using KP0 KQ85? Claiming the detection of FNL is a big deal. And so you can, you know, you have a choice. But as far as I'm concerned, there's a reason to pick KQ75 over KQ85 or KP0 because it's the better mask, removing more free fluid. As I said, there's no reason to believe that we have any significant contamination from foreground in clean maps. If I had to choose one mask, this is the mask I choose. In addition to it, I'm going to subtract this estimated foreground contamination, the point source contamination. Likely, I overestimated by factor of 2, but I take this as it is. That will bring me, FNL to 51. Plus minus 30, 1.7 sigma. If I didn't subtract any point source contamination, it's 55 plus minus 30, that's 1.8 sigma. That's within 2 sigma, 95.4% limit is this. That includes 0. Okay. And this is a quick comparison with the Yadav and Bandel results from 3 analyses. So they use raw maps. So here are the raw map results and for 2 different LMAXs. So our LMAX, which is 500, probably corresponds to their 450 results because that's where the CMB maps are cosmic mass limited to in the 3 years. And so it's 68 versus 48. So with 2 more years of observations, values have come down by that. For the same mask in similar LMAX. The values have come down even more for the larger LMAX. But for our LMAX 600 values, our values are also really higher. So, and now, in comparison, the clean map estimate is this. So our clean map estimate is more like their raw map results at L40. So, I mean, when the significance is less than 3 sigma, this isn't a surprise thing to see when you add more data. Right, so I guess there's no surprises there. All right, so let's put local aside. We shouldn't forget this theoretical thing. We have this ability to measure 2 parameters now, and I'm, you know, more FNLs are welcome. If you have FNL flattened or FNL other things, please let us know. And now you have, this is the equilateral results, the same mass, KQ75, and as a function of LMAX, and all clean map results.
And now values are very consistent, independent of Lmax, and errors are like that. But one thing that was peculiar about this thing is that it's more sensitive to point sources. So point source contamination, so equilateral is more sensitive to the point sources than local. So Monte Carlo tells me that. So that means if I am willing to take this one because it has a minimum error bar, I will need to subtract this from this. But once again, I believe that this is actually a factor of too large. It could have subtracted 11 instead of 22, but I subtracted 22 anyway. So that will give me 51 plus minus 101, and 95% of it is this. And that's better. That's an improvement from the 3-year result obtained by querying it at all. And I know that people working on DBI inflation already use this limit to put significant function models. So I will be curious to see what improvement, what this actually implies for the models, and what models we are actually excluding by these limits. Now, we are not proposing to extend the double map mission to 9 years. So there will be a senior review in April, and that they will see if they are willing to fund us to continue to 9 years. What the new things that we can expect from the 9 years later? And this is something I also briefly mentioned in the first talk. Because this is a non-Gaussianity workshop, let me just reiterate on that. Non-Gaussianity, and we see a lot of potential in non-Gaussianity from 9 years later. So, WMAP 5-year data do not show evidence for equilateral configuration, but do show very intriguing hint, like a 2 sigma-ish hint for FNL local. And I must confess, I think I'm already conservative about reporting my constraint, but our analysis clearly indicates that we're not ready to say we detect the panel. Clearly, more data are required, but it's looking very promising. Let's take our estimate, anywhere 50 to 60, right? The central values. 60 coming from KQ85, 50 coming from KQ75. Then, with 9 years of data, if FNL goes down to 20, we will see it at 2.5 to 3 sigma level by 2011. 9 year survey will be complete in August 2010. Give us 1 year to get this analyzed. And by 2011, this is what we expect, okay? If signal is really there. Okay. Now, that's about it for bispectrum. Let me just switch the gear and turn attention to Minkowski functions. So
bispectrum isn't
the only thing you can do with it. It's, in some sense more fun to deal with image like that, and you can draw a contour, and measure contour length, measure the area, count the number of hot spots, subtract the number of cold spots, see how they change. That's, very fun thing to do, and of course Minkowski was also not the exception. He enjoyed it a lot, and Minkowski came up with this Minkowski function that turned out to specify completely the topological signature of the two-dimensional fields. So you have surface area, control length, and order characteristics. These three numbers will specify completely the topology or two-dimensional field. You can calculate analytically what these curves should look like for Gaussian fields. Okay? So this mu is a number of sigmas of the CND. So this is 2 sigma, and this is the cumulative surface area. So if you integrate down to, essentially negative infinity quarter spots, it's normalized to be 1 because it's a cumulative. Then as you go to higher sigma fluctuations, you see more and more area. Okay? This is the contour length, so it should be symmetric, about 0 if it's Gaussian. So there's no skewness, okay? Hot spot and cold spot. If you multiply the map by -1, you don't see any difference. And this is the Euler characteristic number of coordinate spots minus the number of coordinate spots. Whatever. Okay. All right. And this is the Minkowski functionals from the WM five-year data. We have been doing this since the first-year data. And these points are the data. And these gray zones are results from Monte Carlo simulation. This is showing you the one sigma error band of the Monte Carlo simulation. And these are residual. Okay? And these errors are very, very correlated. This is not the full analysis. This is a real space analysis. And these errors are highly correlated. So we can do the proper statistical treatment of that and trying to assess the detection significance, no significant detection. In the language of FNL, because that's probably what's familiar to you, just take the one resolution. So you first choose the resolution to measure contour length. And let's choose something like 30 arc minute pixel. This analysis has been done by Al Kovut since the first year. He has been doing this since COVID. And FNL is something like this, but notice the negative sign. That's right. If we had a positive sign, it would be wonderfully consistent with the bias spectrum result, but it's negative. Of course, first thing we asked him was that, have you checked the sign? So there were non-Gaussian CNB maps I generated for the first year data release, and he ran his code on that map and sign was correct. Moreover, there was an independent analysis by Hikage et al. That just came out before the WM five-year release, three analysis. And not only just using one resolution like that, he combined all the resolutions. He saw the same thing. He saw the same behavior. It's negative. But let me first say it is completely, totally premature to worry about this now. However, there seems to be some kind of tension. You know, the magnitude are the same, but signs are different. And these values are derived from the same data. You can't say by spectrum 1 sigma 30 and Minkowski function 60, so they're consistent within 1 sigma or 2 sigma. They are same data. You're seeing the same cosmic variance. So errors between these, well, difference between the two, I think, should be smaller than that. What do the Minkowski functions actually measure? And I don't certainly bother you too much with this, but first, you know, one thing I want to say is that I can calculate analytically Minkowski functions. And idea is pretty simple, and this was nicely done by Matsubara, 2003. So Minkowski functions are measuring PDF. PDF of temperature, PDF of one, the derivative of temperature, and PDF of second derivative of temperature. Because you have to identify peaks, right? And you can expand PDF by using Edgeworth's expansion to the leading order in non-Gaussianity, which contains skewness. If you do this only for just pure PDF without any derivatives, you just get skewness of temperature field. So you have only one skewness. But because you have derivatives, you have three skewness. And that's what they are. Okay? So Minkowski functions measure ordinary skewness, skewness of second derivative, and some other combinations, like a first derivative squared and second derivative. What does that mean? It means Minkowski functionals are sensitive to the weighted average or the bispectrum. So they are measuring bispectrum, but they are not measuring all of them. They're just measuring bispectrum with no weights and some with n squared weight or with n to the fourth weight. Right? And because bispectrum looks like this, because it changes sign because of Kursky coefficients, if you just sum this, right, then you get this curve, and notice zero is here, and this skewness never changes sign as a function of scale. Now you weight by L squared. You weight it a little bit more toward high L, but still it actually never changes sign. But if you weight it by L to the fourth, you begin to be sensitive to actually the change in the sign, changing sign. So it is clearly more sensitive to the non-Gaussianity in this form than just skewness. but it's certainly not containing all the information, but it's complementary. And just to show you that these analytic estimates are actually correct, this is a comparison between the analytic predictions of Minkowski functionals as a function of a threshold for FNL equals 100 versus non-Gaussian simulations. And they match up very well. Pretty impressive. I'm very happy to see that. So we measure Minkowski functionals, but it's probably physically more intuitive to actually convert them into the measurements of skewness parameters, which we haven't done, but that can be done. And these skewness parameters can be calculated directly from given bispectra, which means anyone can calculate these skewness parameters for given favorite bispectral models. Certainly, we can do this for equilateral models. There's no difficulty whatsoever in doing that. So you can just take the same data and convert them into equilateral constraints. You can certainly do that. So statistical power is weaker than free bispectral analysis because the Minkowski function is measuring only a part of it. But application can be broader. And this should be taken as an opportunity, I think, because bispectrum has been receiving a lot of attention, and lots of other statistical tools are usually used for finding some other oddities other than FNL. But I think these statistical tools should be explored more in light of FNL. I just gave you one example where we could calculate an analytic form for the Minkowski functionals, but I would imagine that any, almost any statistical quantities, wavelets, for example, or needlelets or local curvature, I think these things can be expanded in a similar manner using Edgeworth expansion and obtain the analytic form for these statistical things as a function of FNL. And different tools are sensitive to different forms of non-Gaussianity. That's another advantage. And why bother? It's all about this nuts, right? Why use different statistical tools? Everybody loves bispectrum because we know that it's the best tool. It's the best sensitive measure. But we are living in a real world where there are lots of other things that form around systematic errors. So what about systematic errors? I don't personally believe any detections until Minkowski functionals and bispectrum, for example, agree. Because that would be very dangerous to just take one measurement and believe that. That's why, although it's completely premature to worry about this at the moment, it certainly bothers me that the Minkowski functions bispectrum giving us different answers. Using the same kind of analysis, no, we haven't done that. We didn't have time to do that. But this value really, this issue came up just before the release, and we didn't have time to evaluate this more. But certainly, that would be the thing to do in with a huge analysis. Yeah, for example.
Just a different shape.
Yeah, that's an entire process. And I don't know, for example, what would be the points of concentrations in Minkowski. We haven't done this on the Monte Carlo response. So there are lots of things to be done. And not just in Minkowski function, but other things. Yes?
Would Minkowski function be more sensitive to environments? Like you're extending your question, like some scale dependent. I mean, because you're measuring skewness, right? So if you're scale dependent, there will be some area, your area, there will be more
very possible, but I just don't know, you know. But I think that a lot of work has been done on the bispectrum, but I think we should do more. So hopefully this example should be taken as an opportunity to do that, to motivate that kind of work. So this is a summary. And the 9-year data will be required to test if FNL is actually 60. And other particular tools should be explored. And I think that's all. Yes.
So between WMAP 3 and WMAP 5, uh-huh. So WMAP 3 FNL used to be between minus 40 and 110. Or something like that.
From Cranier.
Yeah. And no. WMAP5 is minus 9. So it seems like FNL is a, if you plot a probability distribution function.
Well, but that's not my value.
Sorry?
That's not my analysis. Right.
our analysis are consistently sort of within the data.
No, but I'm saying if your negative side can move towards zero, right, then your positive side.
That's right.
So FNL is, if you plot a probability distribution function, it's a skewed thing, which means that when you put error bars on FNL, you should have asymmetric errors. I'm just confused why the errors are symmetric.
I'm not sure if that's correct, though.
Why not?
Why do you say it's asymmetric?
I mean, say if the central value.
I mean, the statistics, if you just assume there's something there, and between 3 and 5, it's just you're improving in terms of statistical.
But you also adding more data. They're independent of the previous one. So if you have noise fluctuation, then you just go like that, right?
The center value changes as well. There's no reason for it to change.
What do you mean the center value has changed?
The best bit is.
I told
them
10%.
Right.
Are you okay with that one?
No, I'm still. So this error that you put FNL something plus or minus 30, right?
Uh-huh.
I mean, how is that just an average variance? I mean, how do you, I mean?
So these errors are derived from Monte Carlo simulations.
Yes,
I mean, do you actually estimate a probability distribution function for it?
No, this is not Bayesian. This is frequentist. So we just run lots of Monte Carlo to do that.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So that answers my question.
Mm-hmm. Great.
So with respect to WMAP 90, your cosmic variance limit is LX 500 at the moment.
Yeah.
So with 9 weeks, as you're saying, I mean, the errors look reasonably consistent from 500 upwards, and you showed that there was, with BMW, there's some sensitivity of, you know, plus or minus 10 with the foregrounds. But I'm just wondering what's going to be driving the main improvements in that FNL measurement, given that you are, you know, you're approaching cosmic variance limited, you've got better beams now. What is it going to be improving?
It's just improving the noise, I think.
But, I mean, up to L equals 500, you've got as good as your cosmic variance limited.
Well, but
I understand that you're going to get better noise. You're going to push that cosmic.
That's right. Yeah.
But I'm just arguing that, you know, you don't see much significant difference between L equals 500 and the higher L. So I'm just wondering, you know, you're not going to improve the L equals 500 measure of that.
I think we do. And I must say, you know, currently we have 25. That's going to go down to 20. That's not too significant increment. But that's an improvement. And in terms of Q sigma, it's going to change the FNL by factor of the whole field of 40, right? So, 20. 5 times 4. Yeah, so that's a significant thing because we are on the edge of seeing something to sigma. The delta F,
so
1 sigma 5 is.
So, if 500, you would say there's going to be an improvement in the FNL measurement?
Oh, no, not at the mass of 500.
Right.
So, we have to go to
Lucia?
Well, I had a bunch of questions that I wanted to ask both of them, but do we have time now,
Well, let's continue for a few more minutes. So we have half an hour break until the next talk at 5. But so,
you know,
so 5 minutes.
If you want to have an open discussion,
okay.
After 5 minutes, we can break up.
I had some question that I would like to hear, you know, from both of them, what they think.
Uh-huh.
So let's thank you again, and then anybody who's tired can go and have coffee.